Hello, and welcome to An Englishman in the Balkans. I'm David Bailey, and over the past nearly 12 years, this podcast has taken on many forms, from interviews and audio diaries to cultural snapshots and expat reflections. You might notice some different podcast names mentioned along the way, but it's all part of the same journey, one that explores life, people, and stories from this fascinating region I now call home. If you're enjoying the listen, I'd love it if you left a quick review or rating wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps others discover the show. And if something in the episode sparks your interest or curiosity, why not drop me a message? I always enjoy hearing from listeners. I always reply.
You're listening to An Englishman in the Balkans.
Welcome to An Englishman in the Balkans podcast with me, David Pacinovich Bailey. In this podcast, you'll get a unique look at life in Bosnia and Herzegovina through my eyes, the eyes of an immigrant. Each episode, I share my experiences living in this often misunderstood country and introduce you to some of the interesting people I've met along the way. From exploring the rich culture and history to discussing the challenges and joys of immigrating to a new country, this podcast offers a thoughtful and engaging look at life in the Western Balkans.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. If you would like to support us and the production of future episodes, then please consider maybe giving us a tip or becoming a member of our podcast family. The link to do that is in the show notes for this podcast. Thanks again for listening. We really do appreciate it.
I'm fortunate today, after chasing a guy that I've been trying to get in touch with, actually for months, he doesn't know that, but I've managed to catch up with him today. His name is Nemanja Knezevic. He's going to tell us exactly what he does. But recently you've heard me talk about culture and the way that in this particular region, and I suppose it's like other places in the world, it's not unique to Banja Luka, that culture and tradition is under threat. And Nemanja works in a very traditional environment, in a cultural environment, and he's got some particular views on those topics concerning Banja Luka and the people, especially in the north of the country, in the Republika Srpska. So, Nemanja, first things, I could ask you a million questions about yourself, and we could spend 4 hours just chatting that alone. So, here we go. Who is Nemanja Knezevic?
If I could say it in short, I can say that maybe a keeper of tradition of the people from this region, because I'm 32 years old. First of all, but I'm in tradition, in folklore from my 10th year. As a small child, I started to dance in ensemble Veselin Masleša, which became my second home, beside, of course, the normal home I have. We like to say that we are one big family with a very positive target in our job, of course, to keep our tradition alive, and to show it to domestic people, definitely, who maybe part of them forgot it. And of course, to the world that maybe hadn't met us at the right way as we would like to be met. I'm a keeper of tradition, at least one of the soldiers of keepers.
All those years ago, when you were five and you started dancing with the ensemble here, was it something that every child was expected to do or every child would do?
When you start dancing and when you start meeting tradition, you are not aware of that. That was the suggestion of my father, to be honest to say. In that period, especially boys are interested in football or basketball. Me personally was interested very much in football. And I have a younger brother, of course. And father came one day and he told us, listen, guys, I will bring you to one place and you will like that. And we were asking, like, what about is that? It's a folklore. And we, oh, no, what folklore? That's for the girls. So that's not for the boys. But he said, first we go, you see that, and then we talk after that. From the first moment when I entered the space for the rehearsals or for the trainings, as we say, I saw the other picture, definitely. I forgot football very soon. I played even now, but only as a part of the training, but folklore became and tradition became my life. You met some normal people or kids in that period. You met some new friendships, and the most important thing, we met our traditional dances and traditional music and singing, which we maybe didn't know enough before we came here. Through the, all these years, from year to year, you, how to say, you fall in love with your tradition. You meet it more and more as you are older, and there is something inside you which became present, and that's it, like it's from the nature. I want to keep this. I want to show this to the world, and I want to keep this for my kids, not only for the world, of course, but primarily for my kids, because that's our signature. And not only from people that are in this moment in the ensemble, only from the generations and generations that lived that way in the villages before the ensembles existed, of course. Maybe as you become older and older, you are much more in love with your tradition and the job we are doing, actually.
We were talking just before we started recording about what it must have been like maybe 200 or 250 years ago in a village, and turn around to somebody who was dancing and say, hey, do you know that in a couple of hundred years there's only going to be ensembles doing this? They would actually, I suppose, be quite shocked to see that the tradition was going to develop in such a way. But the history of folklore in the Balkans, it does go back generations, really, doesn't it?
Yeah. You said it, maybe 200-300 years ago, nobody believed that there will be necessary to make some ensembles to keep something they live every day. Not only 200-300 years ago, you still have that situation in some villages. When you come there, people are still living tradition. We like to say that they are living tradition because it's still normal in some villages near our Banja Luka that people met like no special reason. They're just taking a coffee or something and they sing songs. Tradition of dancing is lost a little bit in living tradition, but that's why ensembles became so important. In one period of modern era, let's say like that, after the 20th century, somehow new wave of new tradition came on these areas also. And my opinion, it was like people were like they felt maybe ashamed of their costumes, of their songs, or of their dances. Maybe they thought that's not interested anymore. Rock and roll came after that, of course. And in that moment, ensembles appeared. Because luckily, I say luckily because of nowadays, there were some ethnomusicologists, peoples, and so that necessary to keep the ordinary parts of the costumes, the parts of the dances, steps, and to keep the old instruments alive and the old songs and the melodies. After that, this type of tradition became very popular, especially in former Yugoslavia, because you had situation in a big companies that were present in that days. The workers were these people from these villages. And maybe during the work, they started some sings, songs, and maybe even dances after the work. And the first ensembles are made as a part of the big companies. And after these years, it became more and more, how to say, some part of professional doing that. And these workers were also the part of the dancing ensembles and the singing groups. And after that, we had, of course, some situations where the companies didn't stay alive, they fall apart, but the ensembles still are alive and doing what we are doing.
Hello, David and Tamara. I'm so happy to say hello to you guys. I tried to text you once and I don't think it ever went through. I told you my life story, why you mean so much to me. I don't think it went through, so I'm not going to try again. But in the late 60s, I started dancing with a company in Los Angeles, the Amman Folk Ensemble, and we did music and dance. We had musicians, singers, dancers. We were a group at our biggest of about 100, all over areas all over Yugoslavia, including the whole Balkan area. And it was an enormous part of the life of so many of us. So I was thrilled to read that you're going to do this Sunday a segment on the folk music and folk dance. That is a huge treat. Thank you so much for thinking of doing that. But in the meantime, I love your coffee and rakia segments. It's just like sitting in your kitchen at the table with you, just chit-chatting in a beautiful village on a spring day, even though it's the middle of winter. Even though I'm in Los Angeles, I have to tell you, we have had a lot of rain, but it's not very wintry here at all.
This, to me, as a foreigner, as somebody that is very much an outsider looking in, there seems to be so much variation in the region. I remember being somewhere, I can't remember exactly where it was now, but there was a lot of groups dancing from all former republics of the former Yugoslavia. The difference in costumes was astounding. The difference in dancing was astounding. And I was actually lost for words. And I turned around and asked people, why is this happening? And I now know that it's a dance from Glamoč, where there's no music at all. So this heritage is very complicated, isn't it?
It is. It's very complex. I apologize in advance because my English maybe is not so good. I haven't used it for many years because I don't have often chance, but I will try to explain it as much as possible in a good way. It's very, there are very different types of, not only costumes, types of the culture, especially in former Yugoslavia. For example, our ensemble Veselin Masleša, on our repertoire, there is different types of dances from all the countries of the Yugoslavia. Fortunately, after the war happenings in 90s, most of our choreographies are, the orientation is on our country of Bosnia and Herzegovina. But what is a very important thing that I always try to explain, even to some of my colleagues, we have so much, let's say, treasury in these dances, songs, costumes, in tradition completely, that it's still not used and showed the right way. You cannot find in every country so many different costumes. Even this is not only by the region differences. There is difference in the same village, by one side of the hill and the other side of the hill, even in the song or the step or the costume. That's something that even professional people from the museums or academy are still investigating and try to make at least photos and the recordings of these differences. I think that, of course, it's very important that the institution, republic institutions, stand beside this and say, okay, we have to do it in the right way. At least while we have still the older people that remembers the differences and maybe make some old costumes and have some old costumes to show, or the instruments and the things like that. In our ensemble, we are very proud of that. We have one of the biggest costume funds at the former Yugoslavia. We have, in one moment, we can have 1,000 people in the costumes. And as we say, about 1,200 costumes, complete costumes, we have in our basement. Every year we try to meet some new village, even we have met a lot of them, but to meet some new village, new costume, new type of singing or dancing or anything the old people remember, to record it, to write all the things about that and to keep it in our archive, of course, and to show it on the stage when we have concerts.
You know, there's two major ensembles here in Banja Luka, yours, Mašlesa, and Čajevac. And again, as a foreigner, I'm walking here today. I walk past, it used to be a nightclub here called Rudi. Yes. Then I come up to the traffic lights and turn right, and there's the bust, the memorial to Mašlesa. And I'm suddenly thinking to myself, what have two people's heroes from the anti-fascist war of the 1940s, what has that got to do with folklore? And I know it's a silly question, most probably, but here in Banja Luka, you've actually named two really traditional activities after two pretty exceptional people.
First of all, I have to say that there is one more big ensemble. It's older even than Masleša and Čajevac. It's Pelagić. they're old nearly 100 years. So they're after the First World War they are made, also as a part of a company that time. But after that, of course, Maslesha and Čajevec were named, as you said, by the national heroes of the Second World War. Čajevec has the name because also of the company that was appeared in that time and was making parts for the aeroplanes. Maslesha actually is named especially because of the reason that our hero Veselin Maslesha is from, he's born in Banja Luka. And he died in those in that years of the war. And as Maslesha is established 3 years after the ending of the war, some smart people remembered in that time, okay, it would be normal and very positive thing to do to give the name of the ensemble to of our national hero who was actually born here and spent some life here. We never talk about the differences of political or other type of differences in through our history. We won't lose the time to talk about the politics now because I think tradition is more important. What is the most important thing that Maslesha already became a type of the brand of the city and of our country. As I mentioned, we are in 74th year of the existence. And during that time, we made a lot of for our tradition. And we, for me, it's maybe more even more important that we make some normal surroundings for the young generations to grow up. Because here, we are all the same. It's not important if somebody's father is a millionaire or somebody's father is working for, I don't know, 200 euros salary. Their kids are in the same conditions here. They learn the same things. They keep the same, let's say, valuable things from our tradition. And when we travel somewhere, we eat the same food, so we sleep in the same beds. It's not important how much money his father or mother has. We are one big family here who lives in the same way as the others. So I think it's very important that we continue with that type of work beside keeping tradition alive, to learn the new generations that have to respect our friends or neighbors, never mind. To help each other, and what is more important thing is until we are united, we can achieve very positive and very great things. If we separate, that's not the same anymore. Until I'm here, I will try to do my best with my colleagues to make that in the future, of course.
The 5-year-old Nemanja, whose father said, I'm going to take you somewhere and you're going to enjoy it, he brought you and introduced you to this. The 5-year-old Nemanja today, out there in the streets, we'll call him Nemanja, who's out there in the streets at the moment, how do the youth today arrive at the door of the ensemble?
That's one of the topics that I was speaking with our friends from Netherlands that were here, and you saw that, of course. We have to follow the civilization, let's say, or some technical changes and achievements. Of course, it's not the same to show to the youth today what is folklore and how to call them to be part of us. And 20 years ago, the situation was like, okay, you have a chance to go to see the concert. You like it or you don't like it. The other type is, as in my case, your father knows the man who is working here, and he said that's positive for the kids, even for the physical activity. Bring them 2-3 trainings to see if they accept that. Okay, let's try on that way. Today, we are trying to do it through the social media, through the Facebook or Instagram or YouTube. And definitely, of course, concerts are always present there. Because we started one festival 6 years ago. When I came here, I was like, okay, we have some regular traditional concerts. Unfortunately, we don't have a big hall for too much audience, except the summer stage at the Castle Fortress. And then I said, okay, I will make one summer festival because we can receive at least 1,000 people there. And there will be grandfathers and grandmothers with their grandchilds or our parents with their kids. The kids will see in the live, wow, I would like to be that. I would like to be there in 5 years, in 10 years, I would like to do that. As they see the football matches and something, I said to my colleagues, okay, we have to make some cooperation with the televisions that folklore and tradition are more present at the screen, like sports and something like that. Because I think, of course, I respect sports. I used to play football. But we now have to make the space, media space, for the tradition and for the folklore. Even some universities of the physical education were suggesting to their students, like, okay, you should go and dance folklore at least for a few months because of your moves and body, how to say, preparations for the trainings. Folklore is not easy. If somebody thinks it's easy, it's not easy at all. You have to dance. The concert is more, at least 90 minutes or more. And what is problem, let's say problem, the costumes are not easy as the equipment for the football. Very often you have many kilos of the costumes on yourself and you have to dance very, very hard and tough dances. I think that we have to follow some modern media possibilities. We cannot stay in the 90s or 2000s years of marketing, let's say. And one of the plans for the future is to try to make some additional funds for the marketing and to be present at the media and the televisions. So I think that's one of the ways to show the kids how it looks on the stage. And after that, they will learn how it's behind the scenes. So there is enough time for that also.
I was sat at the back in the fortress at the castle when the last evening of Banyaluk Ethno Days was. And Afie Dirksen from the Netherlands showed her film. Two things that struck me, and I'd like your thoughts on that. One was the reactions from local Banyaluka people around me, who, without exception, were saying, I didn't know that, I didn't know that, I didn't know that, I didn't know that. And the fact that Banyaluka actually gave Afie a standing ovation, which is, in the rest of Europe, a pretty amazing accolade. We won't talk about the standing ovation. She deserved that. But why is it, do you think, that people from Banyaluka or the other guests from around were saying, I didn't know that, I didn't know that? There must surely be a gap in education of people and where they've come from.
I often think about that, especially when some type of manifestation, as was the Banyaluka Ethno Days, happens. And then I see how much our domestic people don't know about its culture. That's a very negative thing. But to be honest, I still think there are many consequences of the communism. Communism made some different shape of keeping tradition, only what they wanted to show. That was the political type of that period. But also we are, of course, we are guilty because of that. When I say we, I mean on my citizens and every citizen of this republic. The thing is, what I was suggesting to some authorities, let's say, a very good example is Bulgaria. They have subject in the schools tradition. That is the only way to keep it more alive and not to forget tradition, beside doing a folklore. They respect their tradition. They have a regular class at the school, what is only about the tradition. Unfortunately, as I said, in this period, I feel that even 20 or 30 years after the war, people now are interested to meet more about their tradition. And sometimes, as you said, they say, oh, I didn't know that. Why that happens, I'm not sure. Maybe we accepted, I like to say, for our country and our people, not only from Bosnia, even from the region, we accept the foreign influence very easy. And of course, it's okay to accept something, music or something normal, culture generally. But we forget our culture very easy also. That's not good. I don't say in the name of the ensemble, of course, my job in an ensemble is opposite of that. But as a part of the people that we are talking about, that's some very awkward situation. I'm not sure why is that. Maybe it's influenced of the foreign marketing much stronger than our domestic. I respect also, of course, other types of the dances. I don't know, hip-hop or Latino dances. That's very positive. And I think Banja Luka concretely needs that types of schools also. But we may not think about our tradition that it's not at least attractive and interesting, because every people came here. And every festival where we went to, we only received very positive reactions of the audience. You mentioned the dances from Glamoč, for example. Not too much people know that it is the only, let's say, deaf dance. We have many more deaf dances. If we talk about this, the reason about that is connected with 500 years ago and when the Ottomans were here and the occupation. And, for example, if there is a wedding in the village, they couldn't dance too loud or play music or something like that because they will come there and take the bride and that problems. From this period, there are some part of our history, and of course, the type of the dances are played on that way. But I think now we have to use these modern abilities, first of all, to meet our people with our own tradition, and after that, of course, to continue what we have done for many decades, to go through the world and to be the, like, some type of embassy of our tradition.
You're talking about festivals. Festivals, not only to run them, but to actually perform at them, takes an incredible amount of effort. You don't want to be doing the same thing every time. And it's only recently, and I said to my wife, Tamara, who used to dance, who comes up with the ideas? And she says, hey, this is carefully planned. This is choreography. This is just like Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers back in the days of Hollywood, where you actually thought it was all being done off the cuff, but they'd rehearsed and rehearsed those steps. How difficult is it for you and your choreographer to keep coming up with new ideas, variations on a theme?
You described, or your wife described it very well. It's a process. My plan is to make some type of documentary on that topic. It's very easy to see something on the stage. The stage is just the final step of the whole process, which regularly is at least for 10 to 12 months preparations for this type of concerts. How we do it in Masleša is every year at the beginning of the year, we have a meeting of the old choreographers, of the old groups, and me, of course. And we discuss, okay, for this year, like a calendar of the dances, we play this and this choreography because we are very, rich with the choreographies. We have around 60 choreographies of our repertoire. Of course, you cannot play them in the same year, but we try to make the plan which will be played and danced in some particular year. Of course, every dancing group has their rehearsal during the week, twice a week, sometimes three times a week. And we are, of course, starting the preparations. Maybe some choreography hasn't been danced for a few years and dancers a little bit forget it. But the choreographer does a very good job. He has good preparations, definitely, I have to say that. He prepares himself first. We finish our talkings about that, and then he goes to the room for the dances, and they are starting from step by step and dancing, practicing for months and months before the concert, and then we make scenario for the concert. Of course, you have to do it at the way that audience doesn't feel bored, because there are some slower dances, there are some faster dances, there are some dances without the music, and there are some dances with music. So you have to find the line that this type of the dances without the music has the same reaction to the audience as this with the music. Of course, you see now, put one without the music, then one or two with the music, and then after you make your steps by the concert scenario. Concerts are mostly about 90 minutes of length. In that period, it's enough to show 10, sometimes more, choreographies by the concert. Many practicing is necessary to do it without the mistakes. Of course, there are always some small mistakes, but nothing so big that can make a lot of trouble to us or doesn't look good on the stage. So I have to say, the biggest part in that work is for the choreographers. And for now, I'm happy that I have that type of choreographers there for 20 years in Maslesha. First off, Mr. Goran Pupac is the choreographer of the first team, to call it like that. But also the other choreographers are doing a great job, and we have good team chemistry, which makes us to reach this type of results.
It wasn't until recently, and I've seen I'm not an expert, but I've seen quite a lot of folklore and dancing in the few decades I've been here. But it wasn't until recently that I said, wow, this is storytelling, because every time an ensemble comes on the stage, there is a story to it, isn't there?
Yes, definitely. There is always some topic of the choreography, what you want to show, what is the story of the choreography, as you said. Of course, there were weddings, there were other things through our history that were celebrated. Unfortunately, there were some bad things through our history that are shown in the songs. Then you think about it and you say, okay, I could make I speak now in the name of the choreographer. For example, we have choreography from Kozara, where is shown the traditional song that is made many years ago, where the mother lose their sons in the war. She, of course, cries because of that. But after that, the dance starts again after her crying, and it shows how our people survived the hard times, and we didn't only stood on the crying, but we continued and we fight further. Of course, there are some very positive choreographies like weddings types and something like that, how it was done in that time when you couldn't just arrange your girl on your own, but you had to go to ask her father for her hand. Sometimes you are rejected, sometimes you are accepted. But the thing is, definitely every choreography has its story. And the year before this COVID situation, we made an interesting concert at the National Theater at the end of the year. Second part of the concert was made like no stops besides the choreographies. We make it like some collage, as we say. The second part of the concert was about 50 minutes long, and we make it like from like by the regions of the Republic of Srpska. We start by one region, of course not the complete choreography, the part of the choreography. When the people dance first, they just go outside of the stage, but the other stage and the other region, other costumes, other songs came along and continues for to keep all to show all the regions with different steps, with different tradition, with different costumes. That was one very, rich part of our performing. And it's if you want to see it, it's possible to find it on the YouTube channel of our ensemble. I think it's 50 minutes of good used time to see that. It shows much more difference without speaking of the speaker. The dances and the songs show the difference and the difference of the tradition of this country.
Going back to the Banja Luka ethno days, there was a guest ensemble from Sarajevo that turned up not wearing... I will be honest, I was shocked. I thought, what is this? Ball gowns, gentlemen dressed as they would have done in the start of the 20th century. A bit of a waltz, a bit of a kolo, a bit of a mishmash, to be honest, for me. And I turned around to the people that were with me and I said, what is this? And they went, haven't got a clue, never seen this before. Then I'm looking through your YouTube channel and I'm going, hang on, they're doing the same. Now, I need the expert to explain to me so I can explain to other people. From my outsider's point of view, it looked like it was a combination of traditional folklore and an import of Austro-Hungarian culture, and the two had fused together. Am I right? Am I wrong?
You could be cooperate with our ensemble as a very nearly professional in this area. You said it exactly as you should. There was an influence, of course, in that type of and that part of our history of some Austro-Hungarian dances. Let's say we say this here. It's very often to hear Vienna dance or Vienna sings from Vienna, actually, yes. In that period was, as we had, of course, years after that, some influence of the Western culture. These type of dances, as we saw, we call them city dances, like dances from the city. You can say that is a part of our tradition. That is just a moment when somebody thought that's interesting to keep alive, and that was at the maybe king's ball or something like that in that period. And we don't have too much of these choreographies. Maybe one choreography, every ensemble has one choreography, because you don't have some special type of steps that you can make five or six choreographies. It's not that rich as our culture and our types of choreographies. It stood on our repertoire also, as you said, you saw that from the colleagues of Sarajevo, with some differences, but not too much differences, of course, beside the steps, because it's not, it's a foreign. Actually, it's a foreign. We accepted that in some type of, in some period, actually, of...
I'm going to interrupt here. Yeah. Would that actually have happened in somewhere like the Banský Dvor back in the day? Would they actually have danced something like that in the Banský Dvor all those decades ago?
Yes, they would. They would. The Banský Dvor is a good environment for that. You said it well. Because the Banský Dvor is made in that period when that was popular, let's say. Of course, I think here it came from, or from Zagreb, or from Belgrade, as a big centers in that period of Kraljevina Yugoslavia. But the cultural center of Banský Dvor is very often good environment to perform these dances, and we do it. We do it in some special occasions when there are some, how to explain that, balls or special political happenings or meetings or something like that, where they don't want to see traditional dances, which I think it's wrong. I think that we should show the traditional. But they say, okay, we want to be Mr. and Mrs. On a high level. We don't like to be village people. And okay, sometimes we dance that. We don't use it very often, to be honest to say, because I don't think that's our tradition. Even we have that on our repertoire for 30 or 40 years, but it's not by some village from Bosnia and Herzegovina. It came maybe from Austria or from Hungary. I accept that and I respect that. But I think the most important thing for us is to show to the world the 90% of our repertoire that we have from west to the south of our country.
You mentioned earlier about things have changed now. Love it or hate it, social media has had a massive impact on the way that we consume information. And it's providing obstacles now, especially as far as culture is concerned. We were talking a little earlier over some domestic coffee here about some of the challenges. What do you think for people like you, not only across Bosnia-Herzegovina, but across the region that work with ensembles, what are the challenges now that you face? You did mention that maybe one way is to professionalize folklore. Is that the way forward, or do you think there might be another way of keeping this culture rich and at the forefront of people's minds instead of as a secondary thought?
That's very often question to say, even which I ask myself, first of all, how it will be in the future? What is the future of this job? Of course, there is reason why the situation is not so good as it used to be. First of all, some law, let's say, or laws are not made good enough to take care about this area, which we try to change in this period. The thing is that in the beginning you had maybe 5 or 10 ensembles that were good enough. Then you have situation if two dancers make arguing with their choreographer or with the director of the ensemble, they say, oh, I won't be a part anymore, I go to make a new one. And they go and to make new one. And through the years, there appeared a lot of ensembles very easily. That wasn't positive enough because the budget was the same, but the number of the ensembles are using it increased. For me, the best way to keep the representative ensemble is to make the professional ensemble. There are many reasons for that. If you make at least one professional ensemble, of course you have one top ensemble, which is, there is no doubt about the quality and the keeping tradition. But after that, you can use those people to be hired in the other ensembles that are not professional, but they will bring part of the professional job to these smaller ensembles. And the other, as we mentioned, it should be arranged with the ministries of the culture and the school, yeah, to make at least once a week to have a class at the schools of the tradition topic, let's say, about that. So I think the best way for the future is to make one at least one Republic ensemble, but to support these that are not, which are smaller groups, to support them in the right way. But it's very important to make the law on that way that it's not possible so easy to make the new ensemble. You shouldn't just let it to appear every day new one. That's the problem. I hope it will be finished in some moment in next few years. We are trying to do that, and I think we will succeed.
Finally, as I look around all these cups, medals, trophies, it's quite... It's very impressive, Nemanja.
You cannot see everything because some of them are...
I know. Finally, when you come to work every day, when you've finished a hard evening's work, seeing the ensemble performing on stage and everybody's been clapped and they're exhausted because, yeah, it is a very physical activity... Your mind must, like most people, just wander off into a dream of, wow, this is what I want to achieve next. This is where I want to be in 10 years. Where do you want to be in 10 years?
I made some steps in 5 years, in 10 years, and 15 years. Of course, for me, the target is when I leave from one day, when I leave Maslesha, I don't know if it will happen in 5 or 10 years or 20 years, maybe before my retirement. But my task is to make something after myself that wasn't here when I came here. To be honest, completely, for me, the greatest task would be to make the professional ensemble, or at least half professional, which is also possible, professional ensemble after I leave or retire or something like that. Because Maslesha is the most successful ensemble because we always were thinking about, I want to leave something after me here. We were not like, okay, I will do something for my own usage. No, I just want to be as much as possible professional, to keep everything we built until now, but to make a new step and a new task for somebody who will come after me. I really hope that will be possible to make my target or dream true. I would be very proud of myself if my name would be remembered here in this in the history of this ensemble as somebody who made a big thing for the ensembles, as some success, some people before me, because this ensemble wasn't like this from its beginning. It was steps and years of building it, and everybody had his own era, let's say, in ensembles, because people who were working here, they were not here like 1 or 2 years. They're mostly like 10, 15, 20. You met Mr. Luka Medar. He was like, I like to say he's Sir Alex Ferguson of Maslesha. He is for 26 years here. He was here for 26 years and made great things, of course. And even in the tough period of the war, we never stopped working. We always were working. So one day I want to leave after myself half professional or completely professional ensemble.
You're listening to An Englishman in the Balkans.
Welcome to An Englishman in the Balkans podcast with me, David Pachinovich Bailey. In this podcast, you'll get a unique look at life in Bosnia and Herzegovina through my eyes, the eyes of an immigrant. Each episode, I share my experiences living in this often misunderstood country, and introduce you to some of the interesting people I've met along the way. From exploring the rich culture and history to discussing the challenges and joys of immigrating to a new country, this podcast offers a thoughtful and engaging look at life in the Western Balkans. So that's it for this one. Thanks for keeping me company. If you enjoyed the episode, maybe share it with a friend who might like it too. And if you've got thoughts, questions, or just want to say hello, you can always reach out. Also, if you'd like to support the podcast and help me keep telling these stories, you can drop a little tip via Buy Me a Coffee. The link is in the show notes. Even a euro or two makes a big difference. So that's it then. Take care, and I'll catch you in the next episode.